Welcome to Vanguard Radio.
I remember a few Goyfires ago, Alex was making the point how Rosa Parks had actually gone essentially to a communist activist school.
Yes, she was.
Welcome to Goyfire. Alex, Aegis, and Chain are discussing the killing case. Join in, won't you?
During that whole period, I lived through it. I don't remember all of it because, of course, I was only about 13 and 14, but I did read the newspapers, and I remember little Bobby Zimmerman giving us a song at the I Have a Dream speech. Now, nobody knew who Bob Dylan was. Maybe they knew in the coffee shops of New York, but I guess in 1963, I don't think he was more than 19 or 20 years old. So it's amazing a kid like this would get that kind of a platform, for example, to go on live TV, which is how King's speech was delivered on that day, and sing, except that there were Jews, remember, running the NAACP. Oh, that's right. Oh, yes, they founded it, and they were running it. So maybe that had something to do with little Bobby Zimmerman, a.k.a. Bob Dylan, singing to us on that day. And it's the same way down south. We know that these were Jews down there. In fact, recently, Wolfie Blitzer, I saw him on the air. He actually cracked a smile, which is unusual for him, and was boasting to one of his guests that, there were a lot of Jewish young men who went down there in those days. And Wolfie is a Jew. A lot of people, our listeners may not know that. Wolfie's a Jew. Research it. Just type Wolf Blitzer plus sign Jewish into Google, folks, if you don't believe it.
Yeah, well, all these red diaper babies that are now neocons were down with this, these types of instances. And that's why it sort of stuck in their craw that this guy got or was let off on a hung jury. So they dig up the file, retry him 41 years after the fact, and throw him in jail for 60 years on a manslaughter sentence. This is like, how old is the guy? 80 years? 80 years old? It's the same MO as the National Socialist prison guard workers or what have you.
Well, he doesn't mention this in his chapter on movies. I found chapter 19 of My Awakening. He's talking about who runs the media, and he talks about movies, but he does not mention Mississippi Burning. So either it's somewhere else in the book, or I'm thinking of something else. Not in My Awakening, where, because there's a specific list of, in much the same way that Michael Moore's Roger and Me has been, had all of its anachronisms and misrepresentations pointed out, somebody has done that with Mississippi Burning too. It's nearly insufferable.
Alex was saying how insufferable Mississippi Burning was as a cinematic experience, and it's hard for us, especially guys in our age category, in general, the decades of life we're in, to understand the extent to which young people, and now even the hoi polloi of white people, are influenced by popular culture. In other words, they're informed by popular culture movies, quite frequently, mostly Jew movies, to the extent that, true or not, they're going to get their history off the cinema. And they're not going to read the books or examine several sources.
Yeah, it's all presented in one finished product for them to consume in the exact way that it's supposed to be viewed.
Yes, and as an example, Spielberg has a new movie now called Munich. And I posted in the movie section of VNN Forum about it. Now, it's changing subjects a little bit, Aegis. I know you don't prefer this, but it's interesting because, in this case, Spielberg has made a movie about how the Mossad hunted down the guys who killed the Munich athletes. I guess, when was it? 70, 72, I think. But the Jews seem to want to give us this lesson that if you fight back against Jewish Zionism worldwide, as the Muslims are doing in Palestine, we're going to track you down. And he's keeping a lot of secrecy about this movie, but the people who promoted it, there's a Levy, his executive assistant, there's Dennis Ross, the guy who runs Campus Watch, he's quoted in the article. There's a guy named Eric Roth, who's the screenwriter of this movie, he's a Jew, and there's another upcoming screenwriter. What was his name? Sounds less obviously Jewish. Starts with a K. I wrote it in the forum. But what I mean to say is, do you think it's lost on Steven Spielberg the power that he has to influence the white Goyim mind? No, it is not. He knows fully. So of all the topics to dredge up, who cares about Munich 1972? Why doesn't he focus on something that influences vast numbers of white people in this country? You know, there was the Revolutionary War picture made with Mel Gibson. Gibson made the one even about Christ. There are a lot of Christians. And as Alex pointed out, the Jews left $1 billion on the table in that case, and making the story of Christ in you know, year 2000 or 21st century cinematic techniques. Munich, who cares, Spielberg?
Well, we could just segue into the program at this point. I mean, to help bring our listeners along, well, we're discussing Edgar Ray Killen and the Edgar Ray Killen case. It revolves around the murders of three civil rights activists in 1964. In Philadelphia, Mississippi. I'll give you a brief primer. U.S. civil rights leaders are hailing Tuesday's guilty verdicts in the case of three civil rights workers killed in the southern state of Mississippi back in 1964. The verdict in the trial of 80-year-old preacher Edgar Ray Killen came exactly 41 years to the day that the three civil rights workers disappeared near Philadelphia, Mississippi. The jury found Killen guilty of three counts of manslaughter. Prosecutor Mark Duncan had hoped for murder convictions, but said the jury's decision was still significant for the state of Mississippi. Quote, "We have such a troubled history in our country of racial discrimination that also includes violence, maiming, and murder," she said. "So it is important that we continue to remember that murder has no statute of limitations, no limit on prosecution." End quote. This became the subject matter of a movie called Mississippi Burning, which was released in 1989. Now, Alex, have you been following this case at all, or did anything strike you as being particular in this instance?
Well, Killen may have been involved, and if he was, he was fighting back by the only means were allowed. The so-called civil rights revolution, first of all, was not about civil rights, since it limited people's rights. It loosed blacks into the white community, resulting in millions of crimes against white people like Killen every year. And these crimes against whites are not celebrated in film the way the people who track down Killen are celebrated in film, even dishonestly, like in Mississippi Burning, so that they might as well not exist. There's 2 million violent black crimes and whites, and that's reported crimes. There's actually a multiple of that because many crimes are not reported. No one makes a movie about them. No one ever shows honest, innocent whites defending themselves from Negro predation. And the blacks weren't preying on the whites until they were loosed by the civil rights. And then and the Jews messed up the white community, and then they're celebrated in film. The only way whites have to fight back is with direct physical reprisal. And they want to scare people into thinking that it's not possible and it's immoral, and they'll ultimately track them down. So they treat people like Killen like they're a Nazi. And, you know, even though he's an old man, by gosh, they're more interested in that. They don't give a darn about ordinary crime committed by coloreds loosed under civil rights laws like rabid dogs let out of a cage. They only care about anybody who stands up against their system, and they ensure that those people are portrayed as animals that these noble, honorable FBI people are going to track down.
All right, do we see a shift in the Jewish position with the movie Mississippi Burning, where they're not the rebel-rousing activists from out of town? They've become FBI agents.
No, they show blacks as these put-upon saints. They lay it on very thick. I mean, they lay it on in that movie as thick as they do. You know, Southerners, they always show small rural American towns, not just in the South, but they show them as superficially friendly and nice with good manners, but underneath there's deep evil racism. Jews hate non-Jews. They particularly hate whites. They hate what the kind of culture that whites make when they're on their own, which is what you see in the South, people who are friendly and honest. And so they always portray cities as superficially rough, nasty places, but underneath with a heart of gold, and just the reverse in the country. You always know when you see a Christian preacher or you see a Southerner, you're eventually going to see some kind of evil. So these evil hicks like Killen are thwarting the glorious future of multiculturalism, and they're trying to stand against history as represented by Jews who are heroically breaking barriers. And the Jews are always portrayed as some kind of noble saint characters, and the FBI are sternly bringing them to justice. And this is kind of a national mythology that's taught in high school. And if it's not, as we were saying, if it's not Mississippi Burning telling you about the heroic Jewish-led civil rights workers who went south to liberate the blacks and uphold the Constitution, then it's Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, where the Negro is wrongly accused of some kind of sexual advance on a white woman, and this heroic white liberal is portrayed as standing up for what's right, and always the local region is guilty, and the only good white people are those who side with the Jewish agenda. Everybody else is a hater.
So when it comes to Jews, fiction is stranger than truth.
They have a myth and they stick to it. It never changes, and it's been probably better part of 100 years. I don't care where you go to school in the country, you're likely to read To Kill a Mockingbird, and you're likely to read Anne Frank's diary. And no matter where you go in the country, you can see Mississippi Burning on cable, if you want. And then this sustains a national mythology. And then the fact that actually blacks are violent, dangerous, semi-humans, land sharks, as I like to call them, goes unnoticed. It's dismissed as crime or a gun problem. They don't tell you that there's millions of crimes a year that would not happen if we still had the freedom called segregation. Segregation is the will of the people. Segregation is democratic. And segregation is now illegal thanks to the Jews, and we're lectured nonstop through public ads that we can't hire or people who we want, and we have to rent to
land
the Jews, tell us.
The land sharks should not be confused with mud sharks, those being white women who go after Negroes. But, this Southerner's aspect, and Killen is a Southerner, of course. Look, this guy is, 80 years old. When he was a kid, when he was a little boy, up to the age of 12 years old, this guy hung out with Confederate veterans right there in Mississippi, I'm sure. I bet a lot of his whole history is about that. And we should remember that Abraham Lincoln, all those, 2 million people in the Civil War, I haven't read on it lately, but the largest bloodbath in North America by far. It was absolutely unnecessary.
600,000 died.
Robert E. Lee's father, Light Horse Harry Lee, he had been a great, he was the swamp fox. I mean, He was known as the raider of the British forces. What I mean is, this country is steeped in revolution. It's in Jefferson's writing and so forth. Now, Kevin MacDonald has switched subjects in Culture of Critique, a book we talk about, and I think we should continue to talk about. To me, it is to the white nationalist movement worldwide what John Locke was as a philosopher to the American Revolution. But Professor MacDonald has said that all these set-asides and racial programs for invaders, we call them invaders, most people call them immigrants, and for blacks, these various programs that are sapping white taxpayers and that are sapping white men, preventing young white men, qualified white men from getting jobs, these are all foisted upon us at the primary expense of Southern people who came here and established the infrastructure. This is what Professor Kevin MacDonald said. These, our ancestors in the South particularly, mine were in Plymouth and then later in Barnstable and in South Carolina, but these people established this infrastructure in this great North American continent. These were our ancestors, and yet now Southerners are the ones suffering the most. And these are the ones that these goddamn Jews make fun of, these writers like the one Aegis cited. It really is in our own country they're doing this to us, and they're quite aware of it. They have, what whites have to understand, and Professor McDonald has said, Jews have an extraordinary sense of affinity as a tribe with other Jews. In fact, it's so much so that whites cannot even begin to cognize what it is unless we purposefully focus our will and our attention and our academic abilities in that area to understand it. You know, we have to stop being gullible. It exists. It's real. It's affected us mightily to a terrible, denigrated extent, to the point now where, as Alex just finished saying, our women, our children, our sisters are being gutted, raped, murdered. Our institutions are under assault. Professor McDonald said before the Jews came here, and they were the ones that came and exploited these Southerners in the 19th century, the last quarter, and especially in the beginning of this century, well, they were fleeing, and they were already radicals, communist radicals. I mean, it was born and bred into their system. They had whole newspapers about it, and they came here through Ellis Island. And we've talked, I think, a little bit about that before. Ellis Island, you would think every goddamn immigrant in the history of this country came through Ellis Island. No, a lot of us had people who'd been here 150 or 200 years when Ellis Island came around.
Like I've said before, there's a national narrative, and there are a handful of books and movies.
Okay.
Nothing contradicts the narrative, but there are a handful of books and movies that particularly emphasize the morality play as Jews would like us to understand it. And Mississippi Burning is part of that. If you defend your community from the horrors the Jews unleashed on it, you will be treated as a vicious hater by the Jewish media, and you will be persecuted unto your deathbed by the Jew indoctrinated cops.
Yeah, there is a national narrative. That's a good way, as Alex has taught us. And the narrative is, you may remember a few years ago, the older guys will, when they told us they're going to get rid of George Washington, take his name off the school, and Jefferson and all of that because they were racist. Well, you know what? Yeah, that's right, they were. We're going to bring it back. We're going to take pride in their racism. That's what built the country. We used to have a consensual experience, as McDonald said. Now we have one because of the Jews, which is constantly combative. I'm tired of a combative multicult society. I want to live with my own people. So all that stuff is aside, and we can work from the bottom line, which is we're all the same people, and we don't have any contentions or axe to grind with each other. Take out the civil rights hassle, or the so-called civil rights, which is really racial competitions between races on this planet, and you can have a lot more happiness. Even the Yugoslavs have that when they're functioning alone with their own people more. Serbs, I should say. And one other thing about this prosecution, you know, this Mohammed sniper here on the East Coast, Virginia, they're taking these two state to state to try him, and there are many other examples. That's just a particularly blatant one. But a lot of these niggers are committing multiple murders. We prove it in VNN Forum on the non-white serial killer thread. But they're doing this all over the country. They don't even try them on a lot of these trials. They want to save money for the constituency. So white people are getting murdered, and they don't even bother to have multiple trials for them. They just give them one trial. Maybe they get 30 years, not 60 like killing. And lots of niggers get 20, 30 years for murders and rapes. They gave this old man 60. They want to make a point. It's a political point. And justice systems are... courts and laws reflect the mores of a society, and in our society now, we are in cultural Marxism. Karl Marx has ground down, which is what he intended to do, the white man. It's going to continue. You better wake up, white people.
Yes, well, we have a report out of Washington, and I quote, a divided Supreme Court ruled Thursday that local governments may seize people's homes and businesses against their will for private development, in a decision anxiously awaited in communities where economic growth often is at war with individual property rights. The 5-4 ruling, assailed by dissenting Justice Sandra Day O'Connor as handing, quote, disproportionate influence and power, unquote, to the well-heeled in America, was a defeat for Connecticut residents whose homes are slated for destruction to make room for an office complex. Yes, this is the Supreme Court taking one of the last pillars out from underneath the American citizen, the right to private property.
Yeah, and they've always tried to counterpoise property rights with human rights to make it sound like property is not as much a right as anything else, and that it has less to do with your freedom than any other right. I mean, this is basically, in this case, you know, some old woman owns a home that she's lived in forever, and they want to take it and redevelop it so they can grow their economy, and it points to money being the god and the justification for everything else. It's her house. She doesn't want to sell it. I mean, there's an end to it. There's nothing more to it than that in America, but here you get into the problem with a democracy. I mean, it's very hard to stand against the media in a democracy because it can whip up the morons against you and get them clamoring to see you as
the common good,
you as weird or difference, and browbeat you and knock you down. There's no protection for rights because the mob is a bunch of morons, and you can get them wanting blood of anyone who's better or different than they are.
Well, isn't
that's why you don't want a democracy. You want a republic in which, you know, you have representation so that people have some voice, but the idiots aren't in the saddle as much.
Weren't the idiots supposed to be kept in bay by the rule of law?
Well, the rule of law is there's power, and that's the reality of it. And if you have the same kind of people racially, and if they come from a culture that's more or less clean and sane and non-crazy, as white people will tend to produce when they're on their own, then you have a good chance of having the law interpreted as it was intended to be by the people who wrote it. That's not the situation nowadays. Nowadays, it's the Jews are in control. It's whatever you can get away with. And you just come up with whatever reason seems most likely to make your case at the time. And that's very inherently a Jewish way of looking at things. You know, you concoct your reasoning after the fact and do what you want that's gonna advance your own interests and justify it however seems likeliest to work or to play with the majority.
If they're going to seize homes and own properties, you know, in a way, kind of a perverse way, I'm glad. You know what? Let the seizures begin, because I bet Americans in this case, they'll probably be more upset to lose their $300,000-$400,000 houses to a shopping center next door than they would if some Congoloid had raped their daughter. You know, whatever it takes to wake up Americans, let it roll.
Yeah, but I have the feeling this is just going to keep hitting individuals, helpless individuals, just like black crime. And there's going to be that person who quietly loses their home to the so-called greater good, which is defined as the greater good in any instance that suits the people in power or the developers or the politically motivated. And there's just going to be a lot of misery resulting from this legislation. Now, on another note, this was... Now, O'Connor wrote the dissension, but what about how is this court comprised? How can they get a 5-4 decision together for this type of legislation?
I'll say I don't go in much for reading the court or worrying about why they do what they do. I mean, it's already been completely feminized in thinking. They make all kinds of appeals to things other than precedent. We didn't put them there because they're great fiction writers or because they're more moral than other people or because they have beautiful visions. We put them there to say, here's the law. You know, we're trying to incorporate it in terms of precedent, what people have done before, so that there's consistency, so that people have something reliable on which they can guide their behavior. And, you know, once in a while there's a very tricky case that requires a little bit of interpretation, but that's about it. But they're just making up whatever they want and justifying it in ways that will play in the media. So it comes down to either you have money and you have clout or you don't really have any rights to speak of. You know, they can, the great God of the greater economy will justify anything that they do. So a connected developer can simply bribe the politicians and buy out your house even if you live there 60, 80 years. And that's what the new America is all about. money talks, and who has more money than the Jews.
Ed Chain, you want to comment briefly?
I think that this country is probably overbuilt for strip malls and office space anyway. I don't know the stats actually, but I know in a lot of cities they have been in fast.
Yeah, well, I would have thought that being put on the court for a lifetime appointment would have given these court justices a modicum of independence and a modicum of courage to uphold what was originally intended by the founders. And I think that's what they envisioned, at least, by giving them a lifelong appointment, that they would be out of the fray. But as we see in this case, that just isn't the case. We have Ginsburg and Breyer, two Jews, and then we've got so-called conservatives, O'Connor and Rehnquist, just completely dropping the ball where it counts.
Well, they're not answerable to anybody, and that's the heart of the problem. I mean,
yeah, those two Jews, by the way, that makes them, 22%?
Yeah, I mean, we've got World Douglas Jewish fraud on the court, and we've got, that is a stiff competition, but who else do we have? You know, it so happens that O'Connor sided with rational and justified
position
on that
case. Yeah, it was all a game,
case,
I guess. Yeah,
you know, whatever. I mean, it's just another form of politics at this point. They're not really judges. They make up what they want. They do what they want. The whole thing here is basically Jews make decisions without fear of any kind of repercussion, physical, moral, legal, media, whatever. There's no pressure the other way, so they're free to do whatever they want. And indeed, they receive praise from it. And the idea of anybody standing up to them
It's not also the Jewizing effect on society.
Absolutely. I mean, we've lived so long with their narrative and their interpretations of law.
Yeah, more white people, Alex, in this country. More all people have made money by real estate.
Well, I mean, you make money by real estate, but I mean, the thing is, this old woman owned this property there, and they want to take it away because they're going to redevelop their waterfront, you know, just like Baltimore or something. They're going to make a bunch of money and grow their tax base, therefore they don't have any real need in the sense that eminent domain was intended to cover. They just want to do it because they think it'll put more money in the city's coffers. But if the woman had any true rights, they wouldn't be able to do that. But that's what it's come to. There's no value higher than money in America. And if you don't agree with that, get money, and you'll see that you're much more respected than you were without money. It's a shorthand way to understand equality on behalf of the masses, since they're incapable of forming a judgment about something.
That actually is reminding me of the G8 meeting and vicariously the London bombings. We had London bombs going off in the tube recently. A lot of commotion there. This is being compared to 9/11, the definitive terrorist act for the American people that is behind the war in the Middle East, which is looking to be each day more and more of a long-term commitment. I read from London, as Londoners reluctantly descended into the underground subway system on Friday, this police announced the death toll from the rush hour blast had risen to more than 50. Commissioner Sir Ian Blair said 100 victims from the bombings Thursday were hospitalized overnight and 22 remain in critical condition. Each explosive device was 10 pounds or less, Blair said. We have to have maximum consideration of the risk of another attack, and that's why our total effort today is focused on identifying the perpetrators and bringing them to justice. Investigators said they would look for evidence in the debris from Thursday's attacks and in the video footage from some 1,800 cameras in London's train stations. How is this being covered in the U.S. media? Is this being made up to as a second 9/11, or how is this working?
I can discuss that. It works off, as we say, there are these world historical narratives that's not just national narratives for individual countries, but world historical narratives going back to World War II. So, you know, the British are keeping a stiff upper lip in the midst of this horror, this undeserved and shameless horror perpetrated upon them by evil people. You know, and just the way we hear about how they were bombed in World War II, even though they got maybe 5% of the bombing that Germany got at Coventry versus, you know, the fire bombing of the major cities that the Anglo-Americans carried out. You know, how many people died in this? Maybe 50, 60? You know, people in Iraq die at that rate pretty much. That's about 2 days worth of deaths over in Iraq. But, you know, when it's our type of people who die, there's some kind of huge horror. And look at the people who died. Maybe half of them were even English. The rest of them were just coloreds in England. If you go around, you can see sites where they actually show pictures of the victims. And so, you know, who did it? If it was done by Arabs, it was done, or by Muslims, it was done in response to what's going on in Iraq, and is pretty much predictable.
There has been talks that this was a false flag operation to get the war effort, which was lagging in England, behind the troops there. There was some discussion of withdrawal, so a terrorist attack would also be convenient in that sense.
It's hard to tell. I think it probably was, but not certainly was done by Muslims to get at the British for sending their troops over to attack Iraq. That's what I would guess, but, you know, you got to reserve judgment until you absolutely know. 9-1-1 was certainly done as or allowed to happen is probably the most likely, as a way to get America into a new war that Jews thought would be good for Israel. It was a new Pearl Harbor, just like they said in their clean break paper. But this, I don't know. I think this probably was an attack by Muslims. But,
well, there's always speculation of how they would get the military-grade explosive devices and materials. Even if they had the motive, how they would get that type of operation off the ground always gives rise to speculation, especially on the internet and whatnot.
It certainly could be the same thing. I don't see that it's going to help their cause if that's the case. Britain's not really behind the war, and is not going to be more behind the war because of the bombing. Obviously, what's going on in Iraq is a mess, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. There's all kinds of bombings every day. The people don't want us there. They're freedom fighters, and we're attacking them.
Yeah, it is really odd to read in their papers how they always pick out the foreigners to photograph. All of the photo ops in London have lots of brown and black faces in them. They'll always pick out a quote from someone, for example, Raj, something or other. They'll pick out a quote from an immigrant and somehow create this multicultural context where everybody is united. Well, Goyim is united, and the Jews sort of take the lead to fight back against terrorism. It is a very odd way of contexting a European country. Now, this happens in America, but to see them weaving these social pictures together in a European country like England is bizarre. In one particular article from the BBC, they quote a bagel shop owner from Poland by the name of, I think it's Paula Masito or something like that. They take it to absurd lengths, the Goyim multiculture, one people theme, and then the reactive arm.
You're listening to Goyfire on the Vanguard News Network. The Aryan Alternative, news and views for whites you won't find anywhere else. The Aryan Alternative is a print publication of uncensored news for whites. Issue 2 is available now. Be the first in your neighborhood to distribute news without the Jews. by ordering 100 copies for $12 through the Vanguard News Network. Visit govnn.com for ordering information. The Aryan Alternative and the Vanguard News Network. No Jews, just right.
You're listening to Vanguard Radio.
This is my niggas. It's time for the TMB section of our program.
We've got three cases right. In particular. Some people refer to this as the lighthearted section of Goy Fire, but in fact, it is the bottom of the barrel
of negritude.
White people being subjected to typical nigger behavior. We've got a kind man beaten. We've got death for Alpha Boone Wesson, and black rapist murders random white woman. In the story titled A Kind Man Beaten, we have the case of a man by the name of Rauscher. Rauscher is a well-known musician, gardener, and contractor, twice the subject of Times Dispatch stories. As Otto says, he's the kindest, most gentle person in the world. Some of the neighborhood kids who witnessed the random attack agree, quote, "I don't know why they did him like that," unquote, 13-year-old Dequan said yesterday afternoon. Quote, "He gave me donations for the football team," unquote. Shortly after 5 p.m. Friday, Rauscher, who is white, was riding his bicycle through the rear parking lot of the Powhatan Hill Park pool beside the fire station. It was an adult swim time at the pool, so a large number of boys and girls were gathered outside the fence. One boy asked Rauscher a question. He pulled up, and the boy hit him with a sucker punch. Quote, "Caught him with a haymaker. Like boxer Roy Jones, Jr.," Dequan said. At least 10 boys swarmed the bicyclist, punching and swinging, said Dequa, another boy who witnessed the attack. Rauscher heard, "Give me your bicycle," he recalled. Then they were all smiling and laughing and punching. It was all so random, so surreal. In my mind, I'm thinking of the scene from Lord of the Flies when they beat up Piggy. He said they were using racial slurs the whole time. The boys at the pool yesterday confirmed that account. The attack went on for about 2 minutes before Rauscher managed to wrestle his bike free and pedal away. So this is a typical instance, but it seems to highlight behavior that we've witnessed time and time again. Well, I love this. He rides over to one boy who asks, and he asks him what he wants, and then he gets punched in the face with a haymaker, and 10 boys, in quote, come from nowhere and take up the fun and beat him just as badly as the other.
Yeah, well, that's happened a lot of times. When they killed Chris Kime in Seattle, they also attacked Washington Times reporter at his school who was asking questions about their Afrocentrism and some of the ridiculousness related to it, and swarming black attacks are par for the course. Termites eat wood, and blacks attack people in gangs. It's what they do. It's because it's what they are. You can't turn blacks into humans by talking to them or, you know, sprinkling holy water on them. They're still apes. Biology exists. It doesn't go away because we pretend that things are otherwise. We go away when we pretend that things are otherwise. This reporter, Mark Holmberg, calls them mini thugs.
I guess that's on account of them being under 10 years old. Or no, 13-year-old was one. Dequan was quoted as being 13, so I guess they're about the same age.
Yeah, they're always kids. Don't they call them baby niggers or pre-criminals or what's the word? Little apes, little savages, criminals in training, warm-up criminals, mini thugs. It's always, they always do whatever they can to distract attention from the,
well, you know, that's almost
blackness of these little punks.
That's almost cute.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're a bite-sized candy bar or something. Norman Rauscher, hey, maybe he's a Jew. Maybe
yeah.
These maybe the little Dequanios failed to show proper respect for the heroic kike, beloved by all. The kindest, most gentle person in the world. was set on by some of the niggers that his people loosed.
Just a Jew out to dry, ride his bicycle around Richmond.
Probably delivering McGriddles to some of his neighbors. But let's see here. I don't know why they did him like that, said Jaquan.
Well,
these are just jigs being jigs, basically.
Yeah, here's another quote. Otto said the community has been having problems with boys smashing windows in cars and homes, attacking dogs, burglarizing homes, and standing in the street, blocking traffic. I don't know why they would have a problem with that. That sounds like every other African nation.
This is ordinary black behavior, and that it's treated as something extraordinary or unusual is simply the conditions of being employed right for a Jewish newspaper. You always have to the extent you cover black crime, you have to de-emphasize the essential racial quality of it.
There are a few gems in this article. There really are. For example, during a burglary last summer, Rauscher said the kids left a loaded .38 caliber pistol under his bathtub. Now note the term kids. Under his bathtub, there were arrests thanks to involved neighbors. But one of the kids involved in last summer's burglary was back on the street in 2 weeks. That boy came to his door and asked if he could have his gun back, Rauscher said. Quote,
yeah.
That's the kind of noise these kids have. They're fearless.
Maybe they're just retarded. I mean, what this really points up, like most black crime stories, is that our system is Anglo-Saxon. It comes out of German forests and by way of British Isles. And, you know, oh, blood's better than 100 men go innocent than one guilty man be convicted. That's nice if you're working with people who basically obey the law. But when you're dealing with niggers, you're dealing with a different biological entity that cannot follow the law because it follows a law of its own nature, which is jungle savagery. The point is not that this is aberrant behavior. This is nigger normal, all right? And nigger normal doesn't mix with white normal. The races are inherently incompatible, as a guy who lived right around this area said, and that would be Thomas Jefferson, who said the two races, equally free, cannot live in the same government. They don't fit together. This is exactly what he meant. And, you know, what was it? I mean, we had slightly older niggers. These are maybe 12, 13-year-olds. But then you got your 16, 17-year-olds up in Virginia who'd been attacking a bunch of students up there. What was it the last couple of years? So this happens all over the place. And they can try to pretend they're kids and they're somehow unruly, but it's just niggers doing what niggers do. And each generation of these little mini-coons is larger than the last. There's more of them. None of them got fathers. They don't read books. They just hang around and play basketball and steal stuff and attack people. It's fun for them. What else are they going to do? What else can they do? It's like the old joke. Why does a dog lick its balls? Because it can.
Yeah, well, it's amazing to see them at sort of the prepubescent level because they haven't been educated at all, but they're at the peak of rambunctiousness. But they're not very resourceful. So you see them really in all of their glory.
Yeah, they're stupid and they're violent. I mean, let me give you an example. I was in St. Louis for maybe about a year, I remember one time out watching a softball game, and these little coons came by, and they're about 10 or 12. And they're already on the verge. They will try to intimidate whoever they can. Well, they were just being obnoxious around the field, and they were chased off by the people there. They wound up, they crossed the street, and they picked up rocks and started throwing them back at the field and just cursing in the vilest term. These are little niggers about 10 to 12 years old, and finally someone called the cops and them come out, but, you know, they were long fled. But they're just little animals. And then what you do with niggers is you shoot them, just like Killen did. He shot the one down in the Mississippi, and he got rid of the Jews who were sticking them on him. The Jews stick these little coons on us, and they call it morality. In the name of morality, they loose these essentially feral, rabid non-humans on human people who build stable societies, and no one's allowed to get a word in edgewise explaining what's going on. And this is what we must resist by every possible means. There's an easy solution to niggers. You can't turn them into humans by, you know, throwing Jesus at them or pretending to teach them in a classroom. You get rid of niggers by shooting them. And we were the people who brought the slaves into this country, you know, the ones that weren't Jewish, and a hell of a lot of them were. This is the result of that. You got to do your own nigger work, people. We don't need niggers for anything. or Jews either.
Alex was saying niggers are like termites and they do what they do, and this is entirely true. Look at the history of blacks for thousands upon thousands of years. You know, they pilfered, they ran from tribe to tribe. Theft is essentially honorable. It's the way of life. A couple of quick stories. I'll keep them short. When I was in New Jersey, we went up there for the felony riders. They called themselves the Freedom Riders, and those were the illegals who went from coast to coast on, I think, 9 coach bus caravans, not just buses, entire caravans, besieging the Capitol. We met them in New Jersey at the Statue of Liberty across from in Liberty Park. And I took pictures of some of the homosexual governors speeches that day, and he was involved with Golan Sipple, the Israeli Defense Forces captain. Anyway, I ended up in their jail, and I thought it would be like Mayberry, but, you know, with 3 or 4 tiers. You know, I guess I watched too many 30s movies when I was a kid, but no, it's like Pelican Bay. So I'm in there, and niggers tell me, hey, man, what's your pride? And I said, I'm sorry, what's that? They go, what's your pride? You know, they got a little more than that. I couldn't understand what the fuck they're talking about. Then another one says, he's asking you, what's your pride? And I said, well, what do you mean, what's that? And the guy's laying on the floor in his belly. And he said, well, he means, what's your in here? What are you in here for, you see? And so, you know, there's a reason why these kind of ebonics things evolve. and then I was...
something to be... Something to be proud of.
Yeah, exactly. So we just need to accept this and understand it for what it is. They're very serious about it. This same guy was laying on his belly, and the other guy asked him, hey, where's your cousin, man? And he goes, who you mean? You mean rigor mortis? Yeah, rigor mortis. I ain't seen him in a long time. And, I mean, it's just a whole, and this is not a subculture, man. For you whites who are listening, Liberia, remember Liberia, that country in northern Africa? It was founded by ex-slaves. It's been free for 158 years. Not exactly free. They had 72 revolutions, I think, in that time. Their per capita income is $900. The $900 a year, according to the CIA fact book, and they have 2,000 cell phones in the country. So we need to learn from this that it takes at least 158 years to get over the lingering effects of slavery and racism. And then one other thing, look. I was in the bus station in Richmond. This thing, Alex said, like termites, I guess. Listen, that Richmond bus station, the Greyhound bus station, it must be 50 or 60 yards long. And these youths would be in there, and they're wearing sweatsuits. You know, they've got the 18-inch long number 13 letters, or, you know, letters on the front and back, and colorful sweatsuits with stripes down the legs, and their hats on crooked, and a little black Sambo twin earrings. So they walk across the entire bus station, and I watched them. I couldn't believe it. I hadn't seen it. And they're holding their testicles, you know, just right out in public. I mean, I guess that's how they do it in Africa. I don't know. Well, what is that? And I've asked some whites, what is that? Why did they do that? I mean, how could somebody do that? If somebody maybe paid me 50 grand or something, I might do it. You know, a little less than that, perhaps. But, I mean, it's just bizarre. What is that? So whites have told me, oh, you know, they just never learned any better. Well, why? I mean, that's second grade stuff. You know, don't pee your pants. If you pee your pants, you get to go home or to the nurse's office. Just stupid.
Chain, I would have you.
Oh, no, I'm really off on.
Chain, I would have
what?
You. A public fondling of oneself is a very important.
Chain's not
word.
Down with the ball grabbing.
You bet. I'd be arrested if I did. That's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking, Agent. I'm glad you reminded me. If I did that. Actually, if you want to know the truth, when we got up to Yorktown, I was so impressed by that Richmond. I was on my way to Yorktown. When I got up there, they had 500 cops there, and I did see a black cop, you know. And I kind of grabbed it, and I said, you know, I asked him for a little pose, but they didn't like that. Kind of made him angry. I don't know why. He wouldn't pose for me. You know, I thought I'd get a good picture, but no.
Well, we've got a death for U.S. family killer father. A man who ran his family like a cult has been sentenced to death in the U.S. for killing 9 of his children, many of whom he had fathered through incest.
You got that a little wrong, Aegis. That guy was a writer. I read about that story when it broke, and they said he'd written a book. He was a black writer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Did they mention black?
Coffins in his house.
Did they mention black in that case, or was he just a writer?
You know, he was a black writer, I think a civil rights writer.
Okay. Well, that was a giveaway.
Yeah, initially.
Yeah. In this case, we have family killer father who killed his children. Yeah. Marcus Wesson, 58, was held after the bodies were found at his home. The victims were aged between 1 and 25. His lawyers had said he should get a life sentence, arguing it was his daughter who shot each of the victims in the eye before killing herself. Killings in the trial have shocked the California town of Fresno. The jury deliberated for 2 weeks before convicting Wesson on all 9 counts of murder early this month. It also found him guilty of 14 counts of raping and molesting 7 of his daughters and nieces. So this is, shocking news from Fresno.
Yeah, the incredible disrespect of the adult Negro for its own incestuously begotten daughter, the point of killing him. This guy had that funky dreadlocked hair. He looked like Sideshow Bob from The Simpsons in his orange jumpsuit. Huge guy with the freaky hair, matted dreads. Yeah, half his kids were like sired in his own daughter. And I'm sure this was going on for quite a while, and I'm sure quite a lot of people were aware of it. Why we allow these things to walk around and we all play this great charade that they're human? It ain't doing us any good.
Yeah, his trial heard how he exercised a tyrannical control over his family, forbidding the women from contact with the outside world and presenting himself as a divinely inspired preacher. He told his family they needed to have babies for the Lord.
Yeah, he's mixing up his biological, what impels him, with a crude metaphysics, which a lot of Negroes have, if you notice. And this is their so-called churches. And in this case, he jumbled up the two. But what impels people a lot, what impels white people to create civilizations, and what impels black people to excel at sports and rape and murder and pilfer and thieve is it's in their genes, genetically. The proof is in Africa, as I was stating a while ago, but this guy just summed it all up, and then the nerve of the press to write it up when he's captured, instead of saying, look, this was a horrific, demonic being with the coffins. The coffins were actually in the house. He had coffins for them all. They were just around the place like furniture ages. And no matter what happens, they'll say about how nowadays, if blacks murder, right away the implication is that they had mental problems. You know, when whites murder, it's not mental problems. You know, it's just heinous, the way they represent it to us, most often.
Evil.
Yeah, right. Instead of titling this some type of monster, some black monster off's progeny, they have U.S. family father and then a hyphen killer.
Yeah, the race is played down.
Yeah, that's...
Well, that's his pride. Yeah? That's his pride, huh? When they ask you, what's your pride, he'll have the answer.
Well, compare that to the Scott Peterson case. I mean, here you've got incest, you've got a wacky cult, you've got a freaky-looking guy, you've got a whole bunch of swarm of murders, and it's hushed up. It hardly makes the TV news at all, I would assume. I mean, it hardly made the printed news. And yet you've got Scott Peterson, okay, he killed his pregnant wife, that's great. And that's in the news for over a year. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason there. This is an inherently pretty interesting story. There's a lot that could be drawn from it. It's hushed up because it has to be. Another part of what Jefferson meant said about the irreconcilability of races.
Well, shifting to White Plains, New York, the Westchester County District Attorney's Office is considering a hate crime charge against a 43-year-old rapist accused of stabbing a legal secretary to death Wednesday because he told police he had planned to kill a white woman, sources familiar with the case said yesterday. Law enforcement officials would not comment, but the sources said the district attorney's office would seek a grand jury indictment charging Philip Grant, 43, with second-degree murder as a hate crime based on his statements to investigators. Quote, I'm not confirming that. The case continues to be under investigation, end quote, Annie Marie Cordobellis, spokeswoman for District Attorney Jean Pirro, said when it asked whether Grant would be charged with a hate crime. Pressed on whether the office was denying that such a charge was being considered, Corbalis repeated, quote, "I'm not confirming that. That's all I'll say," end quote. Grant is black. The victim was white. A hate crime conviction would increase his minimum sentence. Grant registered as a level 3 or high-risk sex offender who served 23 years in Sing Sing prison on rape and assault convictions, was picked up a few minutes after police found Concetta Russo Carriero unconscious and bleeding from 2 stab wounds on level 7 of a municipal garage attached to the mall.
Now, that woman was particularly petite, too, by the way. They do often pick petite victims. She was very small. And this guy had served, I believe it was 20 years in Sing Sing, and he had attacked somebody there. And then when he got out, to the long and the short, they kept him essentially 3 months on some sort of temporary, he was a sex offender, kept him on 3 months probation. And then lived at some airport shelter, and somebody was quoted by the name of, I guess, one of his pals, Abdullah Abraham. You know, we didn't get to see the picture. It's too bad. They shouldn't mandatorily have all the pictures of the people they sign there. We could learn a lot just from the visuals. But all over the country, I guess people live at airports because people in airports are easy marks for cash or whatever. But he lived in some sort of a troll zone out by the airport. Again, this is one they're representing. This fellow, they're actually saying, oh, well, he was crazy. So therefore, that somehow absolves him. And no doubt some sharp shyster Jew will turn up to defend him, if not already.
Yeah, the quote by his friend Abdullah Abraham is, quote, "He was always talking about getting a white girl to live with. He got tired of living at the shelter," Abraham said. Mm-hmm. "He was upset with that for a while, getting a white woman who had money that he could settle down with. He was determined to find one."
Yeah, determined indeed. And I guess he just had a few bad days. That's what they should say. That should be his defense. Well, he had a few bad days. He had the noble goals to be a gigolo. Oh, Your Honor, he didn't want to be a pimp like a lot of blacks. He wanted to be get some woman who would support him, white woman. It's interesting. I mean, Alex has said it, and it's absolutely true. We have to keep an eye on who's putting us up to believe this total dysfunctionalism represents normalcy, and indeed that which is to be lauded, especially by our youth. And, you know, we're putting a lie to it. We're doing it with Goyfire and with VNN.
We are. Normality is being niggerized. Recently, I've seen a couple of Budweiser commercials in which it's like a nigga to be having a house party and shit, and they're drinking Bud, and the joke is that this woman is late, i.e. late for... didn't have missed her period, and so I was pregnant. And what was the other one? It was something about some... It's just nigger standards of promiscuity and are now seen as something that's legitimate fodder for mass commercials. As the population gets blacker, so do standards.
Mm-hmm.
Niggers can't meet white standards because they're not whites. They're blacks. Why would you expect them to meet white standards? Only conservative fools do that. Pretend to do that.
Well, they said that America wants to see how they live, and we don't want to know who they are. We want to see how they live. You know, whether it's Missy Kim or one of them on one of these pimp shows showing us around their stupid pad, wherever it is. If you want to see how niggers live, I was talking to Byron last night, Alex, and we talked about going and filming them. And he said, "Oh, they love to jump in front of the camera. Just tell them you're making a movie, and we should go right in the cities and show exactly what they're up to."
I remember in Richmond, isn't Richmond taken over by blacks and basically bankrupted? And I know there was a real big mall thing there that they more or less shut down just by their pure...
Well, sure, not just Richmond, Detroit, Atlanta's on the way, the chaos, and a lot of cities, Philly.
And we have this enforced charade where we're forced to pretend things that are conducing very directly to our genocide. And when are we going to give it up?
All right, well, America is a microcosm, but across the pond, we have a Malmo policeman charged over racist emails. Malmö Police Commander Bengt Lindström has been charged with inciting racial hatred in emails he sent to two local politicians, Elmer Ripalo, a city commissioner, and Eva Bengtsson, head of healthcare, received the emails in April and reported Lindström to the prosecutor's office. Lindström wrote the following to Bengtsson. You and Elmer Ripalo treat old Swedes who have worked hard building up the fatherland like parasites and would rather give my taxes to criminals called Mohammed from Rose Garden. To Ripalo, he wrote, withdraw your massive subsidies to all the bloody niggers in Rosengard and let Swedes who have sweated their whole lives building Sweden have their share of prosperity. Jesus Christ, how I hate you and your damned socialist party. Lindström is admitted. Yeah.
That's good.
So that's a cop who hasn't learned the PC ADL indoctrination.
Well, Sweden, yeah, this is in Sweden, which is particularly bad, where they have, you know, if you write a nasty letter to the page of a, try to post something in a newspaper online forum they don't like, they can come and arrest you, and they publish the names and faces, pictures of known white nationalists.
I guess it is bad in Sweden, but somehow I don't think it's maybe as bad as Britain and the United States. I like to think that these countries are maybe 15 to 20 years behind us, although it may not be true because the Swedes seem highly aware of their racialness just as the Scottish people are. And gosh, let's hope that they remain that way because they're practically one of the few germinating seeds left in our people, it seems. Although the Germans are too, to a certain extent. But what I mean is, look, when I call up these cops here in this country, they do the same thing. Except here's not the same as this fellow, the opposite. But in other words, here's a guy who's actually speaking out. So there are people yet willing to do it, and there's a juggernaut worldwide that wants to quash him and shut him up. And we know who it's led by. And it's the Jews, as ever, the Jews.
Yeah, well, their ability to put him on the defensive, and actually this article is in English, so this incident got world attention, shows...
Well, when we hear socialism, the word socialism, we must think Judaism, because that's whose system it is, and it's designed to do cultural battle with white people worldwide.
They have turned the tables, and so they're framing this as a criminal... act, him speaking out about the subsidizing of niggers in Sweden. So unless people realize, you know, who's doing the framing, they're never going to get on the right track and be able to form, let's say, an organization that can counter their organization.
There was a young Swedish boy, remember, not long ago, in fact, stabbed in the heart. This is what, it's been 12 months ago. Do you remember that case? Young Swedish boy, and they asked him if he were somebody that...
Well, they have the same problem in Sweden as they do here, which is Jewish media control and state media control. And there's pretty much nothing outside of a handful of channels. Whatever there is comes from MTV. And so, what is it, the Bonnier family, something like that, over there that owns the private media, the mass private media in Sweden and the Nordic countries, to the extent there is a private media. And these are just small countries with a few million people apiece. But, yeah, you think, well, the Jews don't control the media over there, but they do. In fact, we have a article on GoBNN.com. If you look in our archives, 2004 to 2000, you can find it, who controls Sweden. And, yeah, their media is no freer than we are here. In fact, their laws are even stricter than what we have here. And people, white people recognizing the problem is a bigger problem to the Jews who control the system than the niggers creating the problem. Because they're not creating problems. They're creating solutions for the Jews. They're destroying things. That's their goal. You know, when you stick a rabid dog on someone and it bites them, you knew that was going to happen when you did it. That's what went on in the name of civil rights. They uncaged the wild beasts.
They've taught our women particularly, the women are most susceptible to it because of their maternal instincts, that to deny every race's massive immigration into our country is pure evil. And only the most despicable of beings would even deign to forswear any word against that movement. it's just reached the point to where they've literally caused our own people to be at battle with one another.
And it's amazing what you can do from the moral high ground. And they definitely cordon that off for themselves.
It's very irritating and frustrating when you see stuff like, To Kill a Mockingbird, and you have in front of you the stats on rape, and you know that interracial rape is almost all black and white. But you have a book that's read by almost every American high schooler talking about white women falsely accusing niggers of rape. And then the heroic white liberal who rises to defend them. And this is just, it's a joke. We're being made jokes of in our own country. It's time that you listen to this, realize that, and join us, and we do something about the damn Jews before this whole thing is over.
We're through the topic, so, Chain, you're continuing with your journalistic efforts. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the latest one this week, Aegis, I wanted to talk about is I picked out this case of Marissa Tharp. And I'll tell you why, because she was 20 years old. And when I look at her picture, she would be the kind of daughter I would want, or a woman slightly older, the type of wife. And this woman was blonde, very light blue eyes. I remember Dr. Dan Marius, who is a double PhD, who writes Thunderbolt of Truth, and he was a top aide to Dr. William L. Pearson. He said when he used to teach in Ohio that some people would be, he called it whiter than others, and he talked about a couple of Finnish girls who came to school there, and they were totally white. Well, this is how Marissa looks, just light and light, and a very beautiful girl, and they said that she was so happy when she would come into a room, people would just be enamored of her presence. You know, yeah, young women have this ability, I think it's biologically in them because of the eggs they're carrying. That's the way biology intended it. But she was particularly beautiful, and she somehow began to be stalked by this nigger by the name of Shantez Hairston, 25 years old, done three prison terms, and he figured he was bad. He was nationwide because he was driving between three states, those being, I guess, at least two, East St. Louis, I guess, Illinois, and Iowa, in some red 94 DeVille. And his M.O. was, as a lot of niggers like to do, is hang around college campuses where there are lots of beautiful white girls who are stupid and innocent and are cocksure that the nigger deserves their sympathy. So this is what they do. They benefited from Murray Rothstein's MTV and CBS and Nickelodeon and VH1 misinformation campaigns, but this is what he did. He hung around the campus and he met Marissa, and essentially he stalked her, according to a woman that she worked with by the name of Glenda, and I called her up. And on July 4th, which is considered, as I understand it by niggas, to be some sort of New Age wilding day because they're celebrating their freedom. So I've observed it here in West Virginia. They like to turn up at white people's traditional places, you know, whether those are dance halls or whatever, and they come in huge crowds and disrupt, you know, just and you start their signal flying and their loudness and everything else, all the repulsive range of behaviors. So apparently, I think that this is what he wanted from her. He wanted to be with her on that day probably and take her out. Anyway, it was important. And July, that was the last day she was seen. They found her. She was last seen on July 4th. She called her parents and said she was going to watch, I believe, an 11:30 p.m. fireworks. And they found her in this small town, dead in a trailer, strangled, and raped. And you can see, Alex wrote a very interesting spin show about it, and this lieutenant I called up, and his reaction when I suggested that white girls should be taught by our government the stats on these sorts of things, just the same as they teach us about fetal alcohol syndrome for pregnant women, or smoking, the dangers of smoking, or wearing a seatbelt, or anything else. But any time with any of these people, you get close to them. But let me just before you do go into that, Alex, I just want to say again back to Dr. DeMarcus. He's a smart fellow, and he said that these cops, these guys have advanced degrees. They're young men in their mid-30s or 20s. Certainly, they have bachelors these days. The officers have master's degrees. And they're gutless. So Dr. DeMarcus was giving them the Beneath Barney Fife Award because he said Barney was skinny, uneducated, and when he'd hold his gun on somebody to arrest him, his whole hand would be shaking. That was part of the comedy. But no matter what, Barney tried to do his duty. He tried to overcome his limitations. And these smarmy, low-class, gutless sycophants will not do it, like this Lieutenant Kano or Gann or whatever his name is. Anyway, that's all I want to say about it.
Well, yeah. So they have a veneer of education. They have a master's in something that isn't real, and basically it means they've learned how to be politically correct. And they hear this guy talking to Chain, and it's funny because this guy's in the middle of the country, so you might think they might be a little more naive or slower to grasp stuff than completely Semitically correct types on the coast. But he picked up immediately where Chain was headed, and he was wary of a trap. Even at the definitional level, when Chain was talking about, asked him a simple yes or no agreement question in the Department of Justice, he was very suspicious. He was a rat who had seen traps before and wasn't going to be taken easily in agreeing with anything. But now he did say that these cops do community awareness. And they discuss the dangers of this and that. Maybe they go out and they give a demonstration that, oh, meth is bad for you. Driving drunk is bad for you. Well, you know what else is bad for you? Living around niggers. It can get you killed a lot more easily than not wearing a seatbelt or driving drunk. And the government, the corrupt government's own statistics show, as Craig never tires of quoting, that blacks commit murder at rates 7 times higher than whites, and whites are 50 times more likely to be attacked by blacks than blacks are by whites. In other words, the flow of violence is one way, from blacks onto whites. Any working cop knows this, but this media flack cop is above all concerned with protecting his own position, not protecting white female victims of black crime. So now this nigger somehow came across this girl in a dorm. I think he was there to visit someone else and saw her and whatever. He got fixated on her, was calling her, obsessing about her, and stalking her. And did she report it? I don't know. I mean, would politically correct officer make a case out of this and do something about it?
Well, you know, she reported it one time in Illinois, Alex, and a Detective Lieberman took the case. Now, in some jurisdictions, when there's a domestic spatter, you know, between a man and a woman, once that anybody's made it a statement, that's it. That's all she wrote. You know, you're arrested.
Mm-hmm.
But this Lieberman, wasn't able to carry the ball either because of, I suppose, his jurisdiction's supposed rules or, maybe his own agenda. Well, we don't know all the details, but Lieberman, as it was quoted as saying, he tried to get her to pursue the case. I guess at one point,
Chantez
took her car keys. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's double standards reflected in the power and the police operations. If you say, oh, a Jew's calling me and her asking me, and you call the cops, they'll be, I don't know what to do about it. Go file a civil suit or something. But if you make a couple calls to a Jew, they'll be all over you. And this protection extends to the niggers who are used by the Jews to destroy the white community by literally killing people and just in general making life more unpleasant and less tenable for whites.
I was saying that's exactly true because I got some of my information in the case from, I guess it was the Quad Cities in the newspaper, and they had an article quoting Captain David Struckman, there in Davenport, Iowa, who gave quite a few details after Marissa's body had been found in the trailer down near East St. Louis. So, but yet when I talked with Lieutenant Gaynor, he said, oh, when other jurisdictions become involved, it's the rules of our department that we do not release any information. Well, bullshit, I just finished reading a story, and I pointed that out to him, too, in the chronology. And then I asked him if the FBI were involved. He wouldn't say, because it involved several states. So I had thought normally they get involved. So, essentially, because of the Marxist culture we live in and the Jew-influenced, we're all the same and isn't it wonderful, it's bled down now to every institution in our society, be it universities, police forces, you know, you name it, you know, your wife's network, whatever it is, churches. So this guy, they're essentially, it's almost, I asked him, it's like a quash order, or a gag order. You know how the judges will issue a gag order in certain cases? It's as if the police issued a gag order. This is the public liaison, a guy. He should say, well, you know, oh yeah, Mr. Harrison had three felonies, or he did three. No, he's not going to tell me anything. They're liars.
Yeah, you have
this all in the dime of the people.
Yeah, they're... You have all these supposed rights to know information, and but when it comes down to it, they just clam up, and there's little that you can do unless you can locate the relatives of the victims. Just like the FBI, the local police, the minute there appears to be anything sensitive, they shut up. And we're not releasing information. It's a rule. Well, you know, they made the rule. They could unmake the rule. They could reveal whatever they wanted to reveal. The public should demand from the cops truth about crime and what's going on so that it can protect itself. It's just the government is illegitimate, and often that illegitimacy extends right down to the local level because these people have been drinking out of the same tainted trough.
Yeah, they backpedal. So, okay, the collective is paying their check, but when it comes to explaining easily discernible tendencies in crime, everybody's an individual, and you can't get access to information unless you're representing a direct person involved. Usually it's, one of those persons has been killed.
The media and the government combine to cut off our head. They will prevent us from drawing the obvious inference from the circumstances. Niggers keep killing people.
We're discussing them.
People. We're not allowed to discuss them, let alone draw the obvious conclusion, let alone act on it. That's why Killen's the most horrible person in the history of the world, because he's just an average, jerkwater hick, redneck piece of white trash, as the Jews would style him, yet he drew the correct conclusion, and more than that, he had the balls to act on it, and that scares those Jews shitless. Because he
didn't talk to white people in this country.
God doesn't what the Jews do. He murdered people who were attacking his community, and not murder them, take that back. He didn't murder them. He brought justice to the Jews who were attacking his community. He put Jews in the grave. Jews who were attempting to destroy the South were destroyed because of his actions. He is a hero.
You better watch Steven Spielberg's new movie, Munich. It sounds like you answered to somebody in the reader's mail. It sounds like you ought to turn yourself in. Like, it sounds like you have a problem with hate there.
I hate the right things, and I love the right things.
Yeah. If you ask the white people in this country, run this by people, research it first if you don't believe me. 30% of the people in federal prisons now are Mexicans, not being held there on immigration charges. Yet Hispanics, not just Mexicans, but Hispanics are merely about 14% of the U.S. population. So how in the world are 30% of the people in our prisons Mexican nationals? Well, again, these are the things that are taboo for us to discuss. And any time a crime involves a heinous aspect by a white, it's okay to wallow in details. But if it's any minority, it's taken now as a standard operating procedure amongst all involved that we dare not do anything but glance upon the facts of the case. And so,
Craig, are your comments intended to facilitate vigilantism? You know,
what's that? Vigilantism?
Are you aiding the vigilantes by pointing out that 30% of the prisoners in our federal system are Mexicans? And you don't mean of Mexican descent. You mean Mexicans, right?
Right.
I think people could come to some conclusions on their own upon hearing that information.
Well, I think someday we may have our own trials.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be beautiful. We'll have a trial and trial the people who brought this about. But the point is the government is against the people. The government is, and that makes it illegitimate. The government is at war with the people. By people, I mean you listening to this. You are threatened by what your government, the thing that taxes you and threatens you and browbeats you every day of the year, they are threatening you to the point of wiping out your entire race. Okay, it's not just destroying your neighborhood, destroying the city, and forcing you to move. They're destroying you. You going to tolerate that? I'm not. I'm going to breed as many kids as I can. I'm going to accumulate as much money as I can. I'm going to find as many other people who think the same way, and I'm going to do something about it. And I want you to join me. And all of us here on Goyfire and at VNN and VNN Forum and writing TAA, we want you on our side because we can fight back and we can beat them.
Alex, people are joining. Did you know that? Did you see what Rander said? The guys are contributing pretty startling sums to TAA, and they don't even post. They're not even posters. They just heard about TAA. They come on the forum, they read what we're saying, and they said, I'm getting behind this. It's really it's really encouraging.
It's slowly boiling, and Craig, your reporting has a lot to do with that. And your cover story on hush crimes is was so good that we're going to make that the basis of the paper. There's always going to be 30 to 40% is going to be murders, just like the murder of this Tharp girl. Really, like Chains has a really beautiful Nordic looking girl type you might see a lot more in Utah even than in the Midwest, I would say. But the point is that yes. There is strong resentment of what the Jews have done to this country, even if a lot of people still don't grasp that it's Jews who are doing this, using idiots like Bush. And
Chantez. Yeah, Chantez watches this stuff and thinks that it's his right to go out and take it. And he was taught that by Jews and ultra-liberals.
Well, maybe Chantez just gets off a porn site and sees something about blacks gang-raping white females who love it. And maybe his 70 IQ doesn't know that that's not the truth. Maybe his 70 IQ thinks that is the truth, and all he has to do is go out there and make it happen. And if she resists,
you shouldn't beat your dog because he doesn't know any better, huh?
I'm saying that the Jews are the ones who have. It's hard to conceive of the Jews without seeing them really as the devil's people. I mean, put here on earth, basically to cause problems. I mean, we didn't have these millions of crimes against whites committed by blacks when we had segregation. Both blacks, it's beside the point, but both blacks and whites were way better off when we had segregation. There was not this huge amount of crime. The black community was certainly more criminal than the white community, but it was held in check by our using our freedom to pass laws that prevented blacks from acting the way many of them would have liked to if the laws were more liberal. It's only fear that will keep the blacks from acting on their nature, just like a tiger in a cage or anything else. Although to compare a glamorous animal like the tiger to a nigger is very unfair to the tiger.
All right, closing statement, Chain, Alex.
Yeah, Alex Linder has done a lot to get all this going, and he's met with Professor Kevin McDonald before. We're going to do this worldwide. We're going to get white leaders. We're going to get white activists, the intellectuals who are on the edge of designing the philosophies to coalesce what we more common people are experiencing, and we're going to get it all on cinema, and we're going to distribute it, and we're going to continue, and Alex has begun all this in a big way and made it happen.
Join us. Be an forum. Chain is taking it to the highest level, which is firsthand reporting. Talking to the victims of these hush crimes, and we'll continue to call hush crimes, and we'll not cease calling hush crimes. And the crimes committed by blacks and other coloreds against whites and hushed up by the Jews who control the media and indoctrinate the cops who are afraid to tell you what you both know is obvious about crime patterns. But Chain's bringing original reporting. We're getting, as he said, a very good team in place to do TAA. But number three, we're going to cover the campus UCLA Law School's hiring Jews-only hiring policy as best we can make out. But what's going on here is white people waking up, defending themselves. I like to say, you know, like that abortion thing. I mean, choose white. Choose life. We are the way of life. The system, what you see on TV, what you read in the garbage papers, that is the way of death. You and yours need to listen to what we're saying, understand that we're right, and it's no character defect. We're not bad people. We're just ordinary people with an ordinary amount of hate and love like you are listening to this. But what we're saying is true. It needs to be said, and we need your strength to add to ours and continue to snowball the growth of this white movement, and we can create our own nation, which we control the circumstances in which we and our families live. Thanks for listening to us today.
Yeah, it's important to remember being a member of the reality-based community has real benefits for you, your family, and your grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. we're starting here. We're starting to protocol the crimes against our people, and it's just going to become more and more as time goes on. We're not going to stop, and we want you on our side. We are the good guys. Till next time, America, this is Aegis wishing you best of goodbyes.
The sun on the meadow is summer warm, and the stag in the forest runs free. Gathered together to greet the storm, tomorrow belongs to
Vanguard Radio for the precious 8%.